You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 123 for the week of March 30th, 2011.
Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
My name is George Triforce Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a website created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games. And sometimes it's about procuring said video games.
It is.
Sometimes that means venturing out into the cold, harsh outside world.
Yeah, known as GameStop.
This week, we are going to talk about an intrepid explorer that went out last week in preparation for the 3DS launch in New York, Union Square Best Buy, so almost the epicenter of the American release of the 3DS.
Right, one of the very first Americans to get their hands on it, who are living in the States.
And it's pretty fitting, because this gentleman's name is Isaiah Triforce Johnson.
And you were saying that that is illegal, his legal name.
According to this article that we're pulling this information from Wired, he has legally changed his name. His passport says Isaiah-Triforce Johnson.
Oh, so it's not a given name.
It's not, it's not his Christian name.
Okay.
He assumed the Triforce into his name.
Into his persona, yes. And this guy is a professional gamer, correct?
That's what it says. It says that he, from sponsorships and tournaments and various other game-related funding, like, he supports himself.
I mean, Isaiah Triforce, it showed that he was also at an event in 2006,
for the Wii.
So he's clearly kind of like a Nintendo fanboy. And to be honest, I didn't know there were, like, pro Nintendo players since the Wizard.
Well, I mean, who knows if he's... I'm assuming he has to make his living something else besides Nintendo games, right? I mean, like, all you could play is Smash Brothers, maybe? Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's any, like...
Nintendo fighting games?
Competitive... Maybe Mario Kart? I don't think you can make money off of it, though.
Whenever I think of competitive gaming, I immediately think StarCraft. Like, it's the only one that I think of. Street Fighter as well.
I mean, and there's also... There's first-person shooter leagues that are still active, like Counter-Strike and people like that. But in any case, regardless, maybe that's just his business side, but his passion is definitely Nintendo stuff.
Yeah.
Hanging out with his Nintendo beanie, wearing a power glove in line.
Yeah, which always looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So this, other than this just being an amazing story, it got us thinking about the concept of being first and, you know, waiting in line, getting that first crack at whatever's coming out, and what that means, why people do it. Do we still do it? Maybe. I don't know. and so we'll talk about that today for this podcast.
So before we get into it, have you ever waited for a console like he has, like overnight, waiting in line?
I have never waited overnight, but I did wait day of for the GameCube.
Okay.
Which was maybe 2001, maybe?
And so did it launch at midnight?
No, I just went to, I think it was like
the... what you mean is you just waited in line?
Well, I mean, but I had to go several hours early.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I mean, it was like, you know, it was whenever they launched it, it was probably like a, you know, winter launch sometime. And
I remember I went
down to the local Toys R Us, and there was a lot of people down there, actually. There's probably 50 or maybe a little bit more. I mean, they definitely gave us tickets to prove that, like, we were there to get it.
Line waiting has become pretty efficient these days.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely thought that there was going to be something. And so, yeah, so I had to wait there for maybe, like, a couple hours.
Were you by yourself? Did your mom go with you? Or?
I think it was me and my brother. I mean, my parents couldn't be bothered to wake up at, like, 6 or 7 on a Sunday or whenever Nintendo launches its stuff to go down and wait in the cold at Toys R Us. But, like I said, there were dozens of other people waiting along with us.
And did you go because you were scared it would sell out and therefore not be able to get your hands on it for months to come? Why did you do that?
Looking back on it, I have no idea. Because, I mean, it was a fairly high-profile launch. I mean, it wasn't crazy. Like, it wasn't like a Xbox 360 or, you know, Wii style launch, you know, but yeah. I mean, there was definitely the idea that I wanted to play some stuff right away. I remember being really excited about, and to this day, I still love Rogue Squadron on the GameCube.
Yeah.
I mean, but other than that, I mean, it doesn't seem like there was any shortage or anything. I just can't, maybe I was just more energetic back in the day. Just loved that Nintendo.
Me and my friends waited for the GameCube as well as the PlayStation 1.
Okay.
Maybe it was the PlayStation 2.
I mean, I could see the PlayStation 1 or 2 because they were kind of, the PlayStation 2 was a follow-up to, like, a breakout success.
Right.
And the PlayStation itself was kind of a novelty, you know? Like, you might have actually, it was a brand new thing. Like, yeah. Sony had never done a console before. So I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we thought that far ahead.
Yeah.
I think for us, as kids, you know, it was me and a group of three other guys. And so it served this purpose of bringing us together solely to play games,
mm-hmm.
because as soon as we got it, we would just go home and play it until like 4 or whatever in the morning.
Yeah.
It felt like a unique opportunity to give reverence or in sort of give a special significance to gaming,
you know?
Because we would have parties and hang out together and just play games together regularly.
Yeah.
But that's something that's very different than playing the console on release,
mm-hmm,
you know?
And what is that specialness, though? Like, I agree with you, but it's weird because we're going to race home and do what we do every day. Like,
yeah.
Sit around the TV and play video games, you know? Like, is it just the newness? Is it a novelty? It sounds kind of shallow, but maybe, yeah.
Sure, why not? Yeah. I mean, it's certainly, the newness is absolutely an aspect of it, right? You get to do the unboxing together. It's got the charm and the wonder and the awe before you ever plugged it in.
Yeah.
Who knows what sort of crazy technological advancements this could, you know, congeal onto your television screen.
I didn't know there was a toaster in this thing.
And I think another aspect of it is a sense that you're doing it along with thousands of other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a sort of connectivity thing here between everyone who's playing it on midnight.
Yeah.
At midnight.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah, I think so too, and that's where I'm trying to figure out, because I don't reserve games anymore. I think it's kind of reserving games is kind of a sham.
Well, I mean, nowadays you kind of have to reserve games if you want certain content.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, you know, this is just my soapbox, everybody, but we need to stop doing this because the companies will only start putting more exclusive content in if we keep reserving games.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The only reason they do that is because they can get away with it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, though. But now you're making me feel bad because I'm definitely going to reserve Mass Effect 2, and that'll likely come with.
I know. I don't blame anyone for wanting that content. I blame
Mass Effect 3, excuse me.
Yeah. That's right. So Mass Effect 3, they're hyping everyone up for it. But I mean, I just think it's sleazy that they do that because it's, you know, like for Portal. Portal has exclusive GameStop stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's even worse, like attaching it to retail stores.
Yeah. I mean, so it's, again, this is a total sidebar, but like, I mean, I think it's part of this whole, you know, hyping people up before the thing is released.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe it's not that tangential then, right?
Yeah.
Isaiah Triforce
is
hyping himself up, you know, and I think there's a purity to fan hype and fan excitement when it's something that is from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe your problem with it is sort of the disingenuous top-down approach to forcing people to behaving like Isaiah Triforce.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of...
He's doing it for the love.
Yeah, he's doing it for the love of Nintendo products.
Not the pre-order bonus or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've kind of stopped. I guess the other reason, and I wonder if this is just like a commentary on the days in which we live, but I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything not having it right away because I can go on YouTube and see an unboxing of something.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know, like
unboxings are weird. I don't know why people watch them on YouTube.
Well, I mean, it used to, like what you were saying, like with your friends, you were like opening everything up for the first time, you know, to really see a PlayStation 1, you had to go get it.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't hop on YouTube in 1995 or whatever and see someone like show you the controller and see what's going on. You had to like actually go get the thing.
But not having the thing and then watching it online is kind of a waste. It's not, you're not achieving the same thing. Like, you know, I remember fondly waiting in the van until we saw some semblance of a line at Best Buy because it was so cold outside, right? there's a lot of nostalgia and sort of warm, fuzzy feelings when I think about that experience that I don't think can be recreated by watching videos online or, you know, pre-ordering digital download copies. Like, yeah. There's something very special about what Isaiah Triforce
was doing. We'll just call him Triforce.
We'll call him Triforce.
That's what the video said.
I think that... Anyway, yeah, I think there's something special about that, and I don't know how well pretending we can do it online...
I mean, you can't do the social thing. I think you're right. I mean, it's just the best lines are parties. You know, everyone is hanging out. You know, people bring cards or people bring their actual DSs.
Yeah, that's another reason. I mean, people waited for midnight launches for a lot of games. Modern Warfare 2 had it, and Pokemon, there were lines for that.
People were coming in like full ghillie suits to the Modern Warfare 2 thing.
And it's actually really fun to watch those videos online because you just sit in the comfort of your own bed laughing at people. But for a lot of people, they don't necessarily have those connections on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know, midnight launches are one of the few times you can interact with people who are definitely into the same game at the same level.
Exactly. Cause who else would be there
at
midnight? And that's true. Even if you hang around with a group of people that play games, there is that extra level that most people don't want to drag themselves out to the store in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's kind of like a mini PAX like atmosphere sometimes, because the people who like really care enough are the folks that are going to drag themselves out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And everyone you see, there's a mutual understanding here.
Yeah. You know why we're here.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing happens with midnight viewings of things like Harry Potter. People will line up in droves at theaters all around the world to watch that first. And it's not just because they want to see it before anyone else in the world does. They don't want things to be spoiled. But it's also the fact that they've got people there who just, you know, automatic connection.
It's funny, I think, how different the communities that do this are, even though they're doing the same action. So Triforce was saying that, you know, like, they called the police on him, and the Best Buy managers are trying to shoo him away from the sidewalk because I don't know why. They probably just didn't want people in front of the store. But and they also were Best Buy was lining people up for other releases. And when Triforce was talking, he was like, yeah, there was like some Chris Brown album or whatever. And he kind of rolls his eyes, but it's pretty hilarious because they're doing the exact same thing for the Chris Brown album that he's doing for the 3DS. And it's like, nerds.
You're right. It's really bizarre. The weird thing, too, is... is it being done for the same reason? Is it just to hang out with other Chris Brown fans? Or do you think that maybe there is something to playing the experience first, whether or not you meet people at the event?
I mean, there has to be. I mean, it is the real life equivalent of saying first on a comment thread or something.
Yeah, but we look at those people who do that as kind of douchebags, right? They're saying first because they're just trolling. They just want to be first.
Yeah.
But, you know, the sort of fanaticism you see in people's eyes when they're waiting for the new iPad, for example. I don't think that's the same thing. I don't think that they're being assholes about it.
Yeah.
They're not coming out of the store and being like, yeah, I got this and you don't have it yet. You can't have it for another week.
Yeah. I guess it depends on what your what your mindset is. Like, I would see people like walk away with Modern Warfare 2 or whatever, and they'd be like, yeah, Modern Warfare, and like just pointing at it and stuff. And I'd be like, that's hey, true. Are you just trying to like make fun of me that I don't have the hardened edition of Modern Warfare that you do?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think there is a drive to be first, even though it's almost instantaneous these days with like digital stuff and pre-releases.
Do you think it's like just a desire to own something? Like it's a sort of consumerist badge of pride.
I mean, we do like stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we do like stuff. It's and there's like this insidious.
And I like new stuff.
And it's like the trick to living in a capitalist society. Like you are kind of conditioned to want new things.
Yeah.
All the time. But then like also, I feel pressure from a critical perspective to be first and to play games quickly and instantly respond to them.
Yeah.
You know, like, how about your Mass Effect 3? I'm assuming, you know, obviously you love Mass Effect, but as a nice side effect, like, you will be among the first critical games writing people to play it.
Yeah.
And be able to write about it and to weigh in when it's still fresh, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
It's a benefit, I would say.
It is, and I think there's a value in playing it first simply because you can play it without having your experience influenced by others. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the reasons people go see movies at midnight is because they don't want to have to go through the process of the following day, mm-hmm. seeing it in the newspaper, hearing friends talk about it, and going, oh, it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
You know, because everyone's perceptions are going to affect your own. And when you really value an experience and that first-time experience, you know, pure, then getting it a few days later is just going to kind of drag you down.
Yeah.
And from the critical perspective, I feel, and we've mentioned it a couple times here before, I feel like I'm always running this line between either playing new things now or just not playing them for a very long time.
Yeah.
And like Dragon Age has come out and a lot of people are playing through it and talking about it. And I wasn't a big fan of the first one, so I'm not out there on the first day. Mm-hmm. But even now, even if I wanted to play it, even though because people are saying it's good or something,
yeah.
I would rather wait for maybe 6 months to a year before playing it, just so I can get some distance on it, and not, again, not be colored by everyone else's experiences.
One of the other things that came to my mind when you said Dragon Age was when you get things first, and this applies to hardware and software these days, sometimes it can be a significantly different package than what you would be getting a year later.
Yeah.
Like when I got my PS3, I probably got my PS3 maybe 1 or 2 years after it was released. And by that time, the firmware had been upgraded to a point where you could have, you know, in-game XMB, and they had fixed a lot of the issues with it. The issues that people were really annoyed with when it first came out.
Yeah. So just wait a while and everything gets better.
It's different because, like, if you get that the first day, like, all these first day 3DS adopters, I mean, you know Nintendo's going to put out another version of the 3DS.
Yeah.
That's their MO. I mean, like, they will upgrade the hardware.
Yeah, Apple does the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, there's this line between, do you need to review the device as is when it comes out, or do you need to review or critique it as it is kind of meant to be, or as it is evolved, you know?
Yeah, but that's exactly the dilemma, right? It's not, is it ever as it is meant to be? Because you could say the device or the software, the day it comes out, is the way that it was meant to be.
Mm.
But I feel like by now, especially amongst the gaming communities, we all realize that's not really the case.
Yeah.
People patch things within an hour of launch.
Mm-hmm.
Or the moment, even before. There
yeah.
might already be a patch waiting for you before
yeah,
you ever...
Day one patches. Yeah.
So we've come to accept that as the game is meant to be doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean anything 4 months down the line, 6 months down the line,
mm-hmm.
because updates are so easy to push.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that for me, like, I've been getting more interested in preservation type issues.
Yeah.
And I could see waiting in line to get, you know, like a first unboxed copy or of some game before it ever gets connected to an internet connection to have that artifact.
But what is the value of, I mean, I see the value of it, but to force the issue, what is the value of that if not to preserve the way it's meant to be? All you're
mm-hmm.
really preserving is the way it was in this one moment in time.
I mean, like all, you know, like all artifacts, it doesn't really mean much out of context.
Yeah.
But if you have, I think it would be interesting to see, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to patch a lot of the stuff in Dragon Age 2. I've heard bad things about it locking up for lots of people.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to keep that initial copy around so it doesn't disappear from memory. Because when you're evaluating the game, when you're evaluating even mundane things, like you're evaluating BioWare as a company, like what kind of product do they push out to the marketplace and what do people expect from them? You don't have that perspective if you don't have what you originally had versus what it evolved into.
Yeah.
You know, my old story that I tell, you know, every other podcast is the Pixel Junk Eden story, where I was playing it as quickly as possible because I knew they were going to patch it and I wanted to experience it before it got patched.
And before it got easier, specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, that is a part of that game that just doesn't exist anymore. You cannot buy that old version of the game.
Yeah.
And so you don't really see the original version of those creators, you know, end product, basically.
Yeah. Do you think that we lose something by having that? I mean, this is kind of on the subject of whether or not, you know, day one patches and that kind of things
yeah.
are valuable, but specifically to the idea that if you play it first and you're having that experience right out of the box or on
mm-hmm.
that first day, do you think that there's a value in maybe pushing the idea that what you get the first day is something special and unique that
yeah.
won't necessarily be the same in 5, 6, 7 weeks?
I mean, I think we're already seeing a little bit of that. We'll talk about this on a subsequent podcast, but people's mixed reactions to the Beyond Good and Evil game that, yeah, that just got re-released.
The HD remix or whatever.
When you're playing things on the first day, it's hard not to be caught up and convinced that this is a great experience.
Yeah.
Unless it's totally terrible. You know, unless it is just crashing on you every 5 minutes because, you know, there's an excitement. Like, there's exhilaration to having something new. And so, like, I think it is fun to read critiques and reviews that were written in that moment because I think it captures a certain... I don't know what you'd even call
joie de vivre.
Yeah, like, it is something like it's an intangible feel that people get when they are in the moment, but it's also something that needs to be countered by the folks that wait, I think.
And you wouldn't put either experience above the other.
I don't know. I think I'm more biased towards the slow and steady. Like I'm quite interested. Like Dennis Farr just wrote a huge post about Sander Cohen and Bioshock 1.
Yeah.
Which, like, okay, that's, like, now that is 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's ancient history on the internet.
Yeah, you could have had a child in between then, and that child is talking now.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, as far as... But in any other realm, that is not very long at all. In the academic realm, 4 years is nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like, talking about a movie from 4 years ago isn't unheard of, but, like, games just move so fast that you kind of lose something. So I like it when people kind of stick on one game for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's just my bias, I think.
So what are your thoughts on the difference between playing a game first, playing a piece of software first, and actually handling that hardware first?
Because,
you know, there's always sort of talk around when the next console is going to come out. And I think a lot of people have come to realize, well, we're kind of done with this big midnight launch kind of thing. We'll likely just have trickles here and there, you know, the PlayStation Move or the Kinect, or even firmware updates in some way to consoles are a new form of here's a new experience from the
new
creator.
Xbox experience, the NXE,
right?
You know,
there's no waiting up at midnight for that. You know? You're not going to be like, oh, first to experience the new interface. Although I'm sure some people were.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if you're losing something in that as well when the gaps between new hardware releases are longer and longer.
It's becoming more like PCs, I guess, where it's not a huge, you know, system-wide shift. You just do things piecemeal a little bit.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next time Nintendo releases a home console, not a portable one.
Yeah.
And what happens when Sony releases its next generation portable once they decide on a name for it, you know?
Yeah, their PSP thingamagidget.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would... One of the nice things that... I can definitely see getting a piece of hardware... For some reason, I don't know, maybe this is just a personal thing, but I understand the impulse to grab a piece of hardware first rather than just a game.
Really?
Yeah, because there's something... Because you know what the game is going to be as far as an item, like as far as a physical piece of matter.
Yeah.
It's going to be a disc, it's going to have a manual, and you have a fairly good idea of probably what it'll play like.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what Sony's back touchscreen will feel like.
Yeah.
And even if I watch YouTube stuff, you know, like...
That's true.
It's just something that you have to kind of touch.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'll ever go out and get it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it all depends on the software, though. You know, like,
sure.
It's
Well, I mean, it's something that I think if you have either a really strong interest or a dedication to the company. Like, if you think about it, why did we go out to the GameCube launch? It didn't launch with a Zelda game. It didn't launch with a Mario game. It didn't launch with anything too wild. I mean, there was Luigi's Mansion. And there was Star Wars, which I really liked. I mean, for me, I think it was an attachment to Nintendo.
It didn't launch
Nintendo.
With Smash Brothers?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I think Smash Brothers was a little bit later. It might have been like a launch window
I do
thing.
Remember some late night Luigi's Mansion,
And if you go play Luigi's Mansion now, you wonder what's wrong with you. Like, why do we get excited for this stuff?
Yeah.
But, I mean... For me, anyway, it's... And obviously for Triforce, I think...
Obviously for Triforce.
I think there's like a loyalty issue going on, you know, especially for Nintendo stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't think you and I are, we don't have any loyalties these days.
No, we're just mercenaries. Microsoft, if you want to pay us, we will be there.
Yeah, midnight.
A week
midnight.
In advance.
Or Microsoft Beanie.
I don't know. I mean, it's something that is exciting because you have a history with the physical objects, for me, anyway.
Yeah. I like the idea of having that sort of moment to reflect upon what you're getting and that new experience, mm-hmm. and to kind of give almost like Thanksgiving, you know? It's like you're giving thanks to this new gift, mm-hmm. or like opening gifts on Christmas or something.
And it's, again, it's something that you do with other folks, conceivably, you know?
Yeah, and I think it would be interesting to see game designers incorporate different elements of different design elements to foster that feeling. Mm-hmm. And some games do, you know, like on Cataclysm and MMOs often, but certainly World of Warcraft will include... you know, day before events or events leading up to the launch of Cataclysm.
Yeah.
So the moment that it launches, everyone's there and there's thousands of people and everyone's running around doing quests together. And you get this, not only this huge sense of community, but this huge sense that the developers recognize that you want that.
Yeah.
And are helping you out. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, I don't know, I don't think that they give certain prizes for being the first day of launch, but there's certainly a large reward by playing it, and certainly by playing it before the launch actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It'd be cool if you started getting that with updates, you know? If little sorts of new things started trickle in to encourage you to play maybe DLC the day of, you know?
I don't know. That sounds like a marketer's wet dream that you're describing, right? You're incentivizing it in a way that might get people... I mean, it's just kind of refining the tools to get people hyped up.
Right, but the point being is we're saying that there's a value in that hyped up experience that mm-hmm. first day. So why not, right? I mean, they might be making money on the side, but to some extent it's a good thing that they are rewarding people for playing the day of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's very different than saying you need to attach content to... a retail release, mm-hmm. and then make that content unavailable to people several days later. That's not what I mean.
How does WoW handle that? Because I'm assuming that's kind of what WoW does. If you're not there when it happens, or those quests close off, right?
Well, I mean, no. Yes and no. Like, when the Ankh-Morash, I remember when Ankh-Morash, which is a location in older versions of WoW, it's still there now, but when it first opened up, there was a big event where all these sort of like monsters streamed out and you know, hundreds of people from your server were there fighting everything. And that's a one moment event.
You can't recreate that.
You cannot recreate that. Okay. You'll never experience that again. Mm. And once that happens, then everyone's racing to get into the actual Ankh-Morash.
Yeah.
But there's sort of like a welcoming thing that WoW encourages. So, I mean, yes, you can never experience that again, but it's not something that's bound to the purchase of that game, you know? So when Cataclysm launched, as far as I understand, there's no quests that you can only get the day of, but the day before Cataclysm launched, if you were already playing the game, then I think you were rewarded by having the dragon show up and burn some locations in WoW, right? Some of the... I mean, of course, this is just because of the technical limitations of MMOs. They had to start incorporating aspects of the launch and changes that they were implementing with Cataclysm early. So, you know, you started getting new talent trees and that kind of thing. But it's a cool way to, one, reward players who were already playing, and two, kind of build up excitement for the actual day of event.
Could someone have purchased Vanilla WoW like the day before Cataclysm and gotten access to that you know, Cataclysm linked content?
Yeah, after a really long download. Totally.
Interesting. I'm just trying to trace back how far you need to go.
But only leading up, right?
To buy yourself into it.
Yeah.
Because like, the difference between that and what Triforce is doing is that Triforce isn't really buying himself into it other than the purchase price of a 3DS.
Uh-huh.
Like standing in line isn't really costing him anything besides possibly Frostbite.
Yeah.
Besides possibly the tips of his fingers.
Yeah.
But I mean, doing the Cataclysm stuff... You know, it is costing you buying WoW and then...
paying the monthly subscription fee. Yeah.
To get that stuff. And I feel like that is probably the way of the future. Whereas, like, the past is waiting in line for a specific box that people have taken it upon themselves to wait for. Not because there's anything special inside the box, just because there's something special about getting it first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... Yeah, you're right. He's not paying that much into it. But then I think there's a thin line between marketing the launch of something and the actual moment. League of Legends releases videos and teases about upcoming champions that are launched that the day of you'll have to buy if you actually want to experience that character. Yeah. But everyone can sort of partake in the new dynamics that champion adds before they ever purchase that champion for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and WoW is just one example, but there are other free-to-play MMOs that I'm sure do day of event launches when new content comes out. Lord of the Rings Online, I think, does it, and various others.
Is there ever a time where you got burned by any, like, you know, standing out late to you know, pop a game home and then all of a sudden it's totally terrible or broken or...
No, I think most of the time I've been pretty happy with my...
I'm very picky and choosy. Like, I won't just, you know, it'll have to be something I'm pretty sure that I'm into.
I mean, again, like you, I almost never pre-order anything.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'll pre-order is, like, Mass Effect 3, I'm sure I'll pre-order.
Yeah.
And probably the Elite Edition, because I think the game's awesome. The series, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I already pre-ordered Portal 2. But, I mean, really, who's going to be...
Yeah.
Disappointed by Portal 2.
That's true. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be great? Well, I'm not. It wouldn't be great.
Wouldn't it be great if we were all let down by Valve?
I mean, it would be, you know, it would be sick and twisted, but there would be some part of me that would be fascinated by that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I might pre-order Diablo 3 just because it's already so much hype for a game that'll never come out.
Would you be willing to wait out, like, you know, a night or a day or whatever for if you knew there was going to be a bunch of other people and it was going to be kind of like a party atmosphere for Duke Nukem Forever?
Almost certainly not, no.
You know, 15 years in the making?
Yeah, I mean, it might be fun to be, say, like, I was part of history
when
the doors opened and everyone was like, oh, April Fool's, the game's never coming out. I mean, to be honest, I just, the idea of waiting really late at night is just... I'm tired. I get tired. It's cold out and I'm an adult. I could just go to the store later. I mean, that's the beauty of pre-orders. I don't have to wait at midnight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes you sound like a boring grown ass man when you say it, but I mean, that's the reality, right?
Yep, yep.
I mean, you just don't have that. You just can't commit to it anymore.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, whatever.
Maybe we'll have to, if we ever go and wait for something, we'll have to bring our microphone.
And record. That's a good idea. We should
record a midnight launch.
And ask people why.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should have thought about that.
Yes.
Well, next time.
We should have thought about that. Flown to New York, interviewed Triforce.
Yeah.
Well, maybe when the next... Well, obviously, when the next Nintendo system comes out, we'll know.
Well, ahead of time.
We'll just go... We can find him, too. He'll be in front of the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Manhattan, Triforce.
All right, Triforce, hit us up if you know, if you have any inside scoops on the next Nintendo release.
Yeah, experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And if you folks want to leave your comments or any experiences that you had braving the elements and any of the wild folks that you meet in line night before, night of, you can leave your thoughts in the comments section. ExperiencePoints.net is the website. We update Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. Come by and bring your friends.
Your friends, yeah. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Every time we disagree.